From Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, this is East Central Europe Past and Present. I'm Holly Case of the History Department at Cornell, and occasionally we invite visitors to our campus to present their work on East Central Europe and interact with students. This blog series will bring you their views on the past, present, and future of the region and how scholars approach it. So today I'm talking with Igor Chukarin, who is just completing a dissertation at the École d'Haute Etude en Sciences Sociales in Paris on tourism in socialist Yugoslavia from 1945 to the end of the 1960s. So, Igor, I'd like to start by asking, because you opened your talk yesterday, the title of the talk was, "You have such an interesting topic," and indeed it is a very rich and interesting topic, and I'd like to start by asking how it is you came to do research on tourism.
Thank you, Ollie. First, I became interested, I developed an interest in former Yugoslavia during the 90s, and at the time it was in most schools. The main topic was the ethnic wars, and I was unsatisfied with this aspect because it was overwhelming, and I wanted to know more about daily life, how people lived basically in former Yugoslavia or even before. So this is for this reason, mainly for this reason, that I finally developed. I researched this topic of tourism in Tito's Yugoslavia.
You also have a very interesting kind of academic background. You did your undergraduate in Canada, in Quebec, and then you did a master's degree in Toronto, and now you're doing your PhD in Paris. And so I was wondering how East Central Europe, or the region that we work on, or Yugoslavia, if you'd like to stick to that, have been viewed in this through these different academic lenses over the time period that you've been studying this region. Are there different approaches that are taken in these individual academic contexts, or and you also have the capacity to compare to the American university context. So I'd just love to hear whether there are similarities, differences in the way this region is treated or considered.
Well, first, I would say that to study Southeastern Europe was always not an easy task, because it's kind of sorry for the French expression, l'enfant pauvre, the poor children of East European studies. Wherever I was, it was for most of the time. The focus was on Russia, Soviet Russia. However, the MA program, at the time it was called the CREES, Center for Russian and East European Studies in Toronto, really was very serious to study the Southeastern Europe. And it was there that I first developed a serious interest in the region. In terms of differences, I would say that there is a Toronto is well connected with the Anglo-American historiography and the way to work on this region. And it's not the same in France, which is maybe the French exception, basically, that also produces its work on the region, and sometimes there is it's regrettable, but sometimes there is not that kind of, we need to bridge the gap between these two academic worlds.
Okay, so your project covers tourism to Yugoslavia from Czechoslovakia and France, and the way that Yugoslavia was represented to these two countries through travel brochures and agencies and guidebooks. And so I was wondering, this is a lot of countries to handle, and it's a huge issue. And I was wondering what specific challenges you face bringing these threads together into a single thesis.
Well, the first challenge was to work on a good set of questions. I really, as you mentioned, I work on tourism, and I basically my dissertation is about how the politics of tourism was understood in Yugoslavia by not only the political bodies, institutions, but also by tourist institutions. And this was looking at how tourism became political was the thread that helped me to bridge over these three countries together. The second big challenge was really to do archival work in three countries. Started in the archives of Yugoslavia and Belgrade, then extended my work in Prague in National Archives, and also in France. And all together, I probably visited dozen archives. And I mainly focus on national archives in Prague, the archives of Yugoslavia in Belgrade, then the archives of the ministries of foreign affairs in Belgrade, Prague, and France. And this was a big challenge. It took it was time consuming, but also very re rewarding.
So before you went to pursue your PhD studies in France, you did an interdisciplinary master's degree in Russian and East European studies in Canada, as you mentioned, at the University of Toronto. And I was wondering about the extent to which you found the area studies framework useful, constraining, or what parts of it were of most benefit or of least benefit to you? What parts of it are worth sort of keeping in our time, and what parts of it could fall away without us, losing anything?
Well, I think it depends of each by students' goals. For someone who'd like to just have a academic introduction to their area, I think this kind of academic program is excellent. For those who would like to pursue in the in academia and work on a PhD, they may consider something else. It's all depends of who is leading your program. I was very lucky to be well surrounded in Toronto, in the Crise, which was a amazing place to study. I do believe that history departments, the sociology departments have really their role to play in also developing research in Central Eastern Europe as well.
So, to what extent do you consider yourself first and foremost a disciplinarian, so a historian above all, or would you present yourself as an East Central, or because you work on South, well, you work on Czechoslovakia too, or as an East Central Europeanist per se?
First historian. This is my training. This is I developed a view of the world, a view of the things that surrounds me as like an historian, and this is why this is I'm first an historian. I may eventually work on different parts of the world, and I think this is why I'm first an historian working on now Southeastern Central Europe. This is my position.
So that raises the question as to what you would like your next project to be. So where do you see your work going?
Well, I'd like to extend my expertise a little bit west, and I found amazing how the Adriatic Sea was perceived and how the Adriatic Sea became a locus of contention after First World War. And my next project is about basically how the sea became a object of identity politics between Italians living in Dalmatia, Dalmatians, and also South Slavs. And for this, I'm working on a nationalist Yugoslav interwar association called the Adriatic Guard, Jadranska Straža, and I'd like to compare and look at this association with Italian nationalist association in Dalmatia, and this is what is my next project about. So eventually going west a little bit, and maybe also work on the history of Italy.
That sounds fantastic. What do you feel in general? I mean, the work that you've done is so deeply transnational already, and I think one can pick up some themes in your work with transnational history, but also with the history of that reflects both on politics and culture. And I was wondering, in general, what do you feel are the important unanswered questions left in our field? Where do you see the most interesting work in this field heading, or what kinds of projects can you imagine that remain to be done?
Well, maybe a good history of the Balkans. This is the a difficulty I face as a grad student is to find proper works, good works, in either in English or French, not to mention that also look at works in Serbo-Croatian or in Czech. But really, a kind of maybe I'm too idealistic to look at the history of the Balkans. Maybe that's just a project that cannot be done. And I know that in the past, several initiatives, people tried to work on such a project. I really believe that this region has something. There is a common thread. There is something that makes this region interesting to study as a whole, and this is important to keep this in mind, not to segmented different national or local histories, and to forget that in fact there is also a region that we can talk about. Secondly, I think that historians have done tremendous work in the past to work on daily life, people's mind, people's thoughts, and it's very difficult to know what people thought, what their motivation were at the time. But this is maybe a very long-term goal that I would like to work more about.
So this, of course, raises the nasty question as to what constitutes the Balkans and what makes it cohere. I mean, for you, where would a history of the Balkans begin and end, both geographically and temporally? And what are the attributes that make it make sense as a region?
Well, there is. I think there is no like fixed borders. First, if you talk with a linguist, the Balkans basically has a unity. There is a structural unity among Balkan languages. For a historian or a anthropologists, well, a historian may have a different opinion. We'll see, or the political scientists will see, basically, this region very well fragmented. I do not believe so. There is a continuum in terms of practices, culture, and I think that, for instance, Romania is fully part of it, and as is Greece, as is probably parts of Turkey, and also at some certain point in time, Venice had a great deal of responsibility of what was Dalmatia, what was the the hinterland next to Dalmatia. So there is a region with a variable geography, to use a term that is well known. When did it start? Probably I think that the Byzantine Empire was really when this region first developed a kind of unity, and from that we can move on.
Great, thank you so much. And I just have now a question, since you and I have been talking over the last day or so about your very interesting family origins. And I was wondering if you would be willing to talk a bit about your family, and because it's not irrelevant to the matter of the region and what has happened with people from Russia, East Central Europe, in the past 100 years or so.
Well, Ollie, that's an interesting question. I will tell you something. When I was a kid, I was surrounded by books in Cyrillic, Russian books, and I was fully aware that my grandparents from my father's side came from Russia. So, very young, I was curious about it, and also my grandfather. This time from my mother's side in Quebec. I remember he was a trade unionist, and I was very young, and he told me, "Oh, Tito is a good guy." He was not well educated man. He worked all his life in factories, and for him, just to mention that Tito was someone interesting to look at, it probably triggered something in me. My grandfather in Quebec was not Titoist at all. In fact, he didn't know much about Yugoslavia and Tito, but he saw this as a good example for workers' rights. Then, if we come back to the Russian side of my family, my grandparents moved from Russia. My grandfather fled Russia at the end of the revolution. My grandmother was lucky enough to live in the Baltic countries, so she was safe, but moved to Paris in the 30s to study. They met there, and they stay in Paris, as several thousand Russians did at the time. And this is maybe why I am now studying Central or Southeastern Europe. And however, I have no project to work on the Russian history proper, and not yet, is probably because much work has been done on the topic, and there are so many good historians, so many good social scientists that I think I will leave this field for them.
So Eventually, you mentioned that your family settled in Quebec, and I was wondering a couple of things. First of all, if you could just mention, because I think it's so interesting, the long durée history of your grandmother's family from Riga, and if you could also talk about how the history of immigration in Canada and in these the places where you studied or grew up influenced your decision to study Southeastern Europe and Yugoslavia in particular.
Well, the first question about my grandmother who grew up in Riga is her family settled in this region, but formerly they were Huguenots from France and moved east. This is a indeed an interesting history, but to talk a little bit about Quebec is I must tell you that I was in a primary school, a very tiny primary school, basically with we were only 20 in my class, and one guy was Pole, the other one was Spaniard, the other one was Hungarian, the other one was Egyptian, one was Vietnamese. I didn't feel different at all. And this is only when in high school that in the bigger school that I realized that I had a surname that nobody had, and then I became aware much better aware of my difference in comparison of the region where basically I grew up. It's a region mostly Francophone, Catholic. The English speaking population was just was not very present anymore. I'm talking about the eastern townships, at least was not present anymore in Sherbrooke, but in the countryside or in small urban areas around. Yes, but I grew up in a kind of very homogeneous city. So for me, it was nothing was really pushing me to study Central or Eastern Europe at all. If we just or just there was of course my family background, but apart from this, nothing special. It's the next key moment was right in the middle of the 90s, where several thousand refugees arrive in my hometown, refugees from Bosnia and Croatia. So I taught them French. I was a kind of big brother for some of these refugees who didn't speak at all French and barely English. So this is. It became a key moment for me to really to become, I became aware of the reality of the country where they came from, and after I move on, I continue. I work with people from former Yugoslavia. I mean in Canada, and after that, I decided to embark on an MA program in Toronto, which offered classes in of Serbian language and also very good classes, history classes on the region.
One last question. Do you remember when the first time you learned about the Adriatic Sea was?
I don't remember the first time. I don't remember the first time, but I can tell you that the first time I saw the Mediterranean Sea was in Marseille, and this was for me a tremendous emotional moment. And soon after that, I saw finally the Adriatic Sea, which is gorgeous. That's interesting that you asked me this question because I ask the same question to a lot of Czech respondents for my dissertation, and I ask them basically in what year did they see for the first time the Adriatic Sea. So now that I feel a little bit, confused of not able to answer a question that I ask everybody around me, but as a non-native from the region, I had a first a emotional attachment with the Atlantic Ocean, with basically the sea as I saw it when I was a kid, basically in Cape Cod or Maine.
Okay, thank you so much. It's been great having you, and I hope we will have you back again.